But to keep this thing rolling, outside of the Redskins game, one of the best sights that a football fan can ask for happened tonight, and that is the official return of Andrew Luck to a football field. And the game's still going on right now. The Colts are playing the Seattle Seahawks up in Seattle. But he played the first series. I think he played the first series, yeah. And everything that he wanted to, he didn't take any shots downfield, but 6 of 9, 64 yards, led a scoring drive. They got a field goal in the end of it. He got sacked. He took the hit, got right back up. And that's a perfect start for the preseason. He didn't play at all last year. He just started throwing the ball again a couple weeks ago. So in terms of taking a hit, testing that shoulder out, just a little bit of check downs, getting points on the board, which you show the impact that he has, because it's kind of crazy that he just comes in and just leads him down the field within 2 seconds. He just leads down the field, and it's in a tough pace to play. Granted, it is the preseason once again. But it was nice to see Andrew Luck back on the field. He's one of the most talented quarterbacks we've seen come into the NFL. He made the playoffs, I think, his first 3 years. Made a conference championship game. Has been playing with one of the worst O-lines, with one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Outside of T.Y. Hilton, hasn't had any weapons. He had Frank Gore for a little bit. So you just don't see this a lot. You don't see the Colts probably the only franchise that you put average Joes around their quarterback if they make the playoffs. They're a contender every year. I'm not sure if Andrew Luck can make that difference this year, because back then the division was not that great. And now you have the Texans and Deshaun Watson. You have the Titans and Mariota, and they made the playoffs last year. They won a playoff game on the road. And you got the Jaguars, who people are pegging to make the Super Bowl. So there's a lot more tough competition in this division. But they still have the best quarterback in this division when he's healthy. And he's on the spec. He's on the back. All signs are pointing towards he's going to be healthy. He's going to be making plays. And he's going to be doing stuff that we're used to seeing from an Andrew Luck. So that's quick touch on the Colts side. We'll go to the Seahawks real quick. And, Russell Wilson continues to show why he's one of the best. 4 for 5, 43 yards, a touchdown, strike to Nick Vinette. They have not been able to establish any run game over the past couple seasons. And when they did, it was with Chris Carson, who unluckily got hurt last year. Typical just Seahawks luck with their tailback position. Their offensive line has been terrible. Now they have an offensive line. Brian Schottenheimer's not the most. We'll see what kind of offense he runs, see if he can adapt to the times. But he hasn't really run the most dynamic offensives in the NFL. But Chris Carson is a very talented running back. And if he can stay healthy, and their offensive line has improved with Dwayne Brown, and they've got Jason Britt back. So there's some signs that their offensive line is getting better. The Seahawks, their defense is obviously not as great, but not much more you can ask for getting. You get Russell Wilson, a quarterback, a ground game. You have his weapons aren't terrible. Brandon Marshall and Doug Baldwin have to get healthy. He lost Jimmy Graham and Paul Richardson, but Tyler Lockett's a dynamic receiver in the slot. And he's Russell Wilson. He just runs around, does his thing, finds ways to make plays and stuff like that. So we'll touch a couple more preseason things. Saints took on the Jaguars. Blake Bortles looked good. People think he's terrible, one of the worst quarterbacks in football, but the guy clearly he does what he's supposed to do. He had a touchdown run this game. Lamar Jackson, I touched on it briefly. His passing numbers were not that great. I think like 9 of 22, but he had a highlight reel. He made a nice little, I think they're bloviating the juke move, but he had a nice little juke move to get in the touchdown, get in the end zone. Pittsburgh beat Philly 31-14. Nothing really there. I don't think Foles or Wentz played. Juju Smith-Schuster had another great catch, though. and his touchdown celebrations are in full swing. He sat down and used his QB towel and like was eating off the football like a plate and like wiping his face with the towel. He's just ready for the season, you could tell. And one of the other games going on right now is Cowboys 49ers, and Dak led a very impressive drive in that first drive. Zeke didn't play, but Rod Smith had a couple big carries. He dropped an absolute dime on like a 30-yard ball in between two defenders. Looks like the 49ers defender stopped running, but you cannot ask for a better throw, and that was a touchdown throw. So Dak's looking good. He's looking to prove the doubters wrong. No Dez, no Jason Witten, so it looks like we have some new blood in the receiving core there. And the other thing, last little NFL headline, I'll touch on this real quick, and then we'll move on from the old pigskin for a couple minutes, or we'll see if we circle back around to it. And that is, so as a Seminole, Kelvin Benjamin, another guy I worked with, he had some interesting thoughts about Cam Newton this week. And let me go to the quotes real quick. Let me get, so I get this exactly right. And Cam Newton came into the Carolina Panthers, was one of the better rookies in the NFL, got injured the next year towards ACL in camp. Panthers went 15-1, lost in the Super Bowl. And besides that, he came back, but he came back like, I don't even know how much, I think it was like 285 pounds. And as a receiver, that's not really what you're looking for. And Cam was supposed to be the guy that, Kelvin was supposed to be the guy that helps, that alleviated some pressure off of Cam, gave him a bona fide number one target. But that clearly didn't happen in Carolina. So he was traded to Buffalo midseason last year. And he had some quotes saying, if you put me with anybody other than Cam, he would have been more successful. And here's a legit quote. I mean, I felt like I would have been even more successful if looking back on it, I should have just been drafted by somebody else. I should have never went to Carolina. Truly, I just think Carolina was bad for me. It was a bad fit from the get-go. If you would have put me with any other quarterback, let's be real, you know what I'm saying. Any other accurate quarterback like Rodgers or Eli Manning, which is just comical in itself, or Big Ben, anybody, quarterbacks with knowledge that know how to place a ball and give you a better chance to catch the ball, it just felt like I was in that position. Those sound like fighting words, honestly, especially this is your former quarterback. This is a guy who won an MVP and led a team to a Super Bowl when you were on the sidelines, when you were watching with Ted Ginn and Fozzie Brown and just a bunch of, and just like, you know, just receivers that don't have the talent that Kelvin Benjamin has. And this is what, and Cam won an MVP without him. And I know Cam's not the most accurate quarterback. I don't think he's had an NFL season with over 60 completion percentage, but he's made the playoffs a bunch of times. There's no better running quarterback in the NFL. There's no quarterback that probably does less with more than Cam Newton in the league. And we're sitting here talking, and you're sitting here talking about how if you did anyone else, this is a quarterback that gives you a chance, who pushes the envelope and throws the ball down the field, maybe not more than anyone, but close to more than anyone. And you guys had a great rookie. You had a great rookie year by all standards. And now you're kind of slandering him. It's just really weird. And that was even before I even looked at the schedule and saw the Bills are playing the Panthers in the first preseason game. And that was before I saw the video that I'm sure will be viral. That it went viral before the game, where Kelvin Benjamin's talking to Panthers linebacker Thomas Davis. I don't know what's going on. They're dapping up. They're being cool. And Cam walks over. Cam puts his hands up to say, "What's up, Kelvin?" Kelvin doesn't do anything. Cam just holds his hand out to shake his hand. Nothing. Thomas Davis steps in to intervene, try to be a peacemaker. Cam Newton just gives him a little, "Nah, I got this," back away. And Cam and them are just, they're not going at it, but they're just trying to talk. Cam's trying to be like, "Yo, what's up? Talk to me. Let's just do this man-to-man. You're talking to the media. Let's do this." Kelvin just kept trying to walk away. Continually is trying to walk away, diffuse the situation. And Cam's like, "Dude, what is up? Like, we were teammates for 3-4 years. And what's, like, talk to me. You have a problem with me. You think I'm trash. You think I can't accuracy. You don't think I can, you know, I don't have the mental capacity to do all this, then say it to my face. Don't say it to the media. And Kelvin didn't want any of it. So Cam just threw his arms up and walked away and gave and was like, all right, cool, whatever, man. I'm not seeing the rest of the season. This is ridiculous. So it's just weird. And I guess, you know, for a receiver who hasn't done anything outside of that 1 year in the NFL, who hasn't come reported in shape in that one, besides one season, and you saw them go to the Super Bowl without you, and you saw this offense destroy teams in the playoffs without you, and you're just like, man, it's cool. I don't want to be there. These players don't need me. I'm just like, it's just really strange. And then you're not even, and then you talk to the media, and they don't even have the manhood to talk to him to his face. So it's just a really strange situation. And KB backed it up. I mean, it's only preseason, but KB had a touchdown. He scored a touchdown in this game. He had a great play along the sidelines, ran in, and he jumped in the crowd. Looked like it was. I mean, we haven't seen Kelvin look this healthy in a while. Maybe he got his act together. Maybe he's a little motivated. But you could be motivated and not take shots at Cam Newton. And at Cam Newton, some people don't like Cam Newton in the media. Some people don't like him in general. They think his antics are a little too much. I love Cam Newton. He's probably my favorite quarterback in the NFL. He's talented. He's a leader. He can make the throws. He can run. He has no problem putting his body out on the line. He's fun. No one does as much in the community as him. That smile lights up a room. I love his cadence call. He's just my favorite quarterback. Probably even, I could say of all time, honestly. I love Cam. He's kind of made me, I'm not a Panthers fan, but I mean, I root for the Panthers because I root for Cam. And it's just, I mean, I may have like played my hand there, played my card that I know I'm like, oh, you know, Cam Newton this, Cam Newton that against KB. But, you know, KB, you know, just your brotherhood. You know, I've seen NFL players, I've seen football players, that's a legit brotherhood, as they like to call it. It's a close-knit group, and you're just going behind his, and you're talking to the media, and then when you're approached, you don't have the nerve to say anything to his face. Not even getting into a brawl, just be like, yo, talk to me, what's up? There was no harm. There was no one's going to fight. No one's going to do anything. We're just going to have a good conversation on the field. And if they were going to fight, everyone was going to see it. And they're not going to risk getting suspended over a little spat in the media. So they'll probably have some post-game quotes, and they'll probably squash it. And everyone will move forward. Everyone will just, you know, it's the number one trending thing on Twitter right now. I'm looking at it. Former teammates Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin have a tense reunion on the field. Yeah, it was tense. And then the picture is them celebrating and stuff like that. And it's kind of crazy. Cam Newton's a quarterback. Kelvin Benjamin's one of the biggest receivers in the NFL. And Cam Newton in this picture is taller than him. Cam Newton's a big boy. I don't know who I would have taken in a squat between these two. I probably would have went Cam, even though Kelvin's from the muck and Bella Glades and stuff like that. But, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I'm all for rivalries in sports. I'm all for competitiveness and stuff like that. But I'm not for taking cheap shots. And then when you're approached, you just hide, or you just like try to squash it and act like nothing happened. And you don't even dap the guy up. Like, you dap up your enemies. It's just like, you show respect in that sense a little bit. The whole thing's a little childish. I mean, whatever. Kelvin, you're still talented. There's no breaking that point. You're still, when you're healthy and motivated, you're a phenomenal 50-50 ball catcher. You can make a little plays after the catch. You can run receivers over. You're a phenomenal red zone threat. And you have a quarterback. You have three quarterbacks in Buffalo who don't have the talent that Cam Newton holds in his pinky. But you're going to get all the targets. You probably will have a career year because Buffalo is going to be trailing and Buffalo is going to be throwing the ball a whole bunch. And they don't really have a lot of people to throw to outside of you. So, you do your thing there. You enjoy playing for one of the worst teams in the NFL. And Cam Newton's going to be leading if his O-line can stay healthy, which is not happening. He's going to lead one of the, he's going to lead, in my opinion, one of the best teams in the NFC. And that's not, we'll end the football this. Don't mean to come on. It just brought me to the next thing. It's just snowball effect. And I always talk about one of the things, my favorite thing is that everything starts up front. The teams with the best O-line always have the chance to win. Eagles, Patriots don't have the best talent, but they're the best coached offensive line. We saw what happened 2 years ago when the Vikings lost their offensive. They started 6-7-0, and then their whole offensive line just went down like flies, and their team collapsed. Last year, they had health. You saw what they could do. Saints, one of the best. Look at the best O-lines, the Steelers. All the best O-lines are all on the best teams. And the Panthers had a questionable O-line coming in, and they've already lost. They lost their best guard, Andrew Norwell, to a free agency to the Jags, and now they lost their tackle. So their season could be done before we even started because their O-line's falling apart. The Vikings have lost two starters. And this was supposed to be the Vikings' year with Kirk Cousins in the mix, with all their talent on offense, with all their defense, one of the most talented rosters in football. And if they don't get their O-line fixed or O-line settled and such like that, and their offensive line coach, Tony Sperano, just passed away a couple weeks ago to a heart attack. Like, you have to, and he's one of the best O-line coaches in football. So with their struggles on the O-line, not having their O-line coach, original O-line coach, one of the best in football, two of the NFC favorites could be out before we know it. And the one thing about the NFL is it's a battle of attrition. The Eagles proved last year that if you have depth and talent, then that can be overcome because they lost their starting left tackle. They lost their linebackers. They lost their starting MVP quarterback. They lost a whole bunch of stuff. And they still won the Super Bowl. And that's depth. That's coaching. That's all that stuff. But the Panthers don't have that depth. The Vikings don't have that depth on the offensive line. So if this trend continues, the NFC just got a whole, just there's the strongest conference. They just got a, just two of the big teams just are trending downwards. So you look at the Saints, a very popular Super Bowl pick this year. Great offensive line. The Eagles will be there again. The Rams, their offensive, they invested heavily in their offensive line last year. All five starters are back this year. It's just, you know, it's already starting. We're not even completed the first week of preseason. And teams are starting to are starting to show their colors and how they're going to be for the full season, and we're not even close to being done. So let's hope the injury, that's the biggest thing about preseason. You know, whether you hate it, you love your team or hate your team, or hate the teams in the league, whatever type of fan you are, you want everyone to be at full strength. And people losing starters this early in camp is never a good sign. Not luckily, we haven't had any marquee players go down yet, but we've had a couple, like I just mentioned, we've had a couple offensive linemen go down. So the only thing you do is, and it's a sticky situation, I talked about this earlier with Geis a little bit, I'll touch on it, and I promise this will be in terms of my NFL talk. And that is, it's just, if there's no fine line in how you prepare for football, because you have to go full speed to get better. You need reps to improve, especially when you're integrating new players into a new system and stuff like that. But is it really worth it in these games that don't matter, in these practices that you're just, I mean, It's just like a weird thing because I don't think these many people got injured back in the heyday, but we've seen a lot of players get hurt, a lot of important players get hurt in preseason and in training camp over the past decade, and there doesn't seem to be a real answer. All the sports medicine in the world, you know, that can help. That's a great way of monitoring it and dictating when. Like what muscles and who should rest and when they should rest and stuff like that. But even all the sports science in the world can't, it can rehab a torn ACL, but it can't prevent a torn ACL. It can't prevent a torn hamstring. It can't prevent, you know, a broken ankle, a broken leg. You take a cut wrong, your ankle snaps, your Achilles snaps. Like, we can rehab it quicker, but you can't diagnose it any quicker. Which is, it's just a double-edged sword that is football. It's a really weird, it's a really interesting situation. And let's just hope that the rest of these teams can get through this, can get through this next month unscathed. Because NFL, a lot of the teams have 3 weeks. By the time this podcast airs, all but four teams will have 3 weeks left. And then, bam, the season's here. So let's hope they can get through it. Hopefully they can. No more offensive linemen. Those are the big hogs. I love those guys. They make teams go. Let's just hope they can stay clean. They can protect all the star players and stuff like that. So we'll leave the NFL coverage at that. And I have about 35 minutes to go, and I'm just going to touch on, I don't know how many people are going to be listening to this, because I don't know how many people are soccer fans, but I'm going to do a quick little rundown and preview of the European soccer season, and mostly talk about the Premier League and what to expect in a season that, the time this airs, Man United will have played, Tottenham will have played, Chelsea will have played. So three of the big six will have played at this point. But there's a lot of juicy storylines heading into this. And I don't think one game is going to make or break a season in terms like that, in case I can talk about and dissect the season and stuff like that. So we'll pick up right there. And we'll start at the top of the Premier League, where we find Man City, who set all kinds of records last season in terms of points, goals scored, most wins in a Premier League season. They just destroyed all the competition. Except, you know, they lost to United, they lost to Liverpool. I think they slipped up one other game, but, you know, may not be the greatest season in the history of the Premier League with the Invincibles and Arsenal, but in terms of complete and domination, there's tough to find a more dominant team than this Man City team. And they didn't lose anybody. They didn't really sign a bunch of people. They brought in Riyad Mahrez from Leicester City. He was Premier League Player of the Year a couple seasons ago when Leicester City had that miraculous run to the title. And so he's going to provide some depth up in the attack. And then and their other big, you could call it a signing, but not really, is getting Benjamin Mendy, their left back, healthy. You know, he missed most of the season last year. And they were forced to, Pep Guardiola, the coach manager, was forced to make a central midfielder by trade and turn him into a left back in Fabian Delph. And he got injured a little bit too, and then they had to bring up Zinchenko, who's a young player and stuff like that. So it's just a really dominant team, and did enough teams did the teams below them do enough to overtake this team? And I don't think, I'm not sure if they did. They're still 7-10. They're by far the odds on favorite, 7-10 to win the title again. Followed by Liverpool at 4-1, United at 10-1, Tottenham and Chelsea at 20-1, and Arsenal at 25-1. That's pretty much the big six are pretty much only teams that can do it. And with how they've kind of retaken the helm of this league. And their main goal, I think, yes, winning the league is probably still at the top of their list, but they wanted to have a further Champions League run. They made the semifinals 2 years ago. They made the quarters last year and lost to Liverpool. And that's why Pep Guardiola was brought in. Yes, he's going to build this dynasty, this machine, as you would say, with how well they possess the ball and just finish everything that comes their way. But they've come up short in the Champions League over and over again. And that's what they're hoping to do. So their biggest challenger, biggest threat this season is my favorite club, Liverpool. And I'm not saying that as a homer. The odds say that they are overwhelming favorites to finish second, overwhelming favorites to challenge City. And they won. They played four times last year, and Liverpool won three of those matches. And the first one was a little bit of a crazy game because Sadio Mane, attacker for Liverpool, got a red card. And the game was, you know, City was up 1-0, but the game was pretty even. And then after Liverpool went down a man, it was just a 5-0 bashing by City. But besides that, Liverpool plays City as well as everyone in this, as well as anybody in this league. They filled up all their holes, you could say. They needed a goalie. They spent a then world record fee, and then it got overtaken by Chelsea signing a keeper. But in Alisson, the Brazil's number one goalkeeper, and his impact's already being held. He can distribute the ball well, makes great saves, great elite reflexes, great instincts in the box and stuff like that. And Liverpool has had a goalie problem for years. It was exacerbated in the Champions League final when two goalkeeping blunders, although he could have been concussed, the doctors in Boston said that he was concussed, but that's not the excuse for the two mistakes he made, those two blunders that cost Liverpool the Champions League. And in preseason, he made a couple errors as well. So Liverpool getting a goalkeeper by itself is the main thing. But then they shored up their midfield. They didn't really have a lot of depth. They lost Emre Can to Juventus and stuff like that. So they bring in Fabiano from early signing. That came out of nowhere. He was tipped to go to United or another big club. But he just signed for Liverpool under the radar, got that business done early. And then we had this player from Germany. Well, he plays in Germany. He's from Guinea. And that is Naby Keita. And he had a pre. He was supposed to become last year, but his club, RB Leipzig, held on to him and said, you can get him next year. We want to play with him in Champions League. And so we had a pre-contract agreement. He came in right away, and he's been great in preseason. Fabiano's been great in preseason. And for once, Liverpool has midfield depth. And that's not something we see often. We haven't seen this often from Liverpool, except in their old Steven Gerrard days in the mid-2000s, where we actually have, we have legit six, seven quality midfielders that can play a role and can, you know, if one goes down, we're not as hamstrung. And then in the attack, we bring in a very cheeky signing, Jerdan Shaqiri. He's a Swiss player, played in Stoke, and Stoke got relegated, so we got him for £12.5 million, which is great. And we've already seen, I recommend you checking out his highlight package from the beginning, from this preseason. He had a bicycle kick and an assist and a bicycle kick in his first game. And then he had another rocket goal and then another great assist. And he's just filling in nicely. He seems happy. And he was literally the man for Stoke, and everything revolves around him. But now that everything, he's going to be a rotation player, he's going to come in off the bench. Now that everything doesn't revolve around him and there's quality players around him, we're starting to see how good of a player he is. And to top it off, we get Daniel Sturridge back fit, our striker. And what he should have been in England's World Cup squad if he was fit. But that's the problem with him throughout his career, is that he can't stay fit. And we loaned him out to the worst team in Premier League second half of last season. He wasn't fit for that, didn't really look well. And now this is the happiest we've seen him since the Luis Suarez days. He is confident. He has played great, 6 goals in 9 games. So this is a strong Liverpool side. And they play their counterattacking press, their gegenpressing, their full throttle for 90 minutes. There's this style of play. Keeps a team like Man City, who wants to possess the ball and stay back, it keeps them on their toes, and a lot of City mistakes lets Liverpool goals, which is Liverpool pressing and Man City not knowing how to handle that pressure. So those two are going to duke it out for the title. They're probably the best teams positioned to compete in Europe and hold that English mantle. And as a Liverpool fan, we've spent a lot of money. This is the most we've spent in one window, I would assume. But half of that, if not most of that money, comes from selling Felipe Coutinho to Barcelona last year. So with the strong defense, actually 4 or 5 center backs, 6 center backs, 4 wing backs on each side, multiple midfielders, actually 8, we can go to 7, 8 midfielders if we're being generous. A couple of them made the World Cup. Marco Grojicic may have played in the World Cup. There's a bunch of talent on this team for the first time. And if there's a squad that's ready to challenge City's depth and firepower, it is Liverpool. And I think they have a clear advantage over Man United or the Tottenhams and the Chelsea's. So we'll get right into, we'll go right into Manchester United, who's tipped to finish third.
And United kind of made headlines for all the wrong reasons this offseason. You know, coming off a second place finish, 81 points, 82 points, that would have won the title in a lot of years. And a lot of people just were fed up with their style of play. They play a lot of defensive, not a lot of attacking flair. Paul Pogba seems to play phenomenal with France and Juventus and every other club except for United, but he was second in the league in the league in assist. And, you know, this is Jose Mourinho's third year. Every time he's in his third year, he gets fired the year after. He runs out his welcome. And he is the odds-on favorite to be the first manager fired from the Premier League, which is pretty shocking for a team that just finished second. And one thing he bemoaned the whole offseason, I need transfers, I need players. I have my list of five. Ed Woodward and the board knows who I want. They know how to get him and all this stuff. And a lot of their only transfer business was done before the World Cup. They signed a backup goalkeeper. They signed a backup wing back. But their main signing was bringing Fred, a Brazilian midfielder, over from Shakhtar. And he played in Ukraine. He's an exciting young Brazilian midfielder. But besides that, they didn't get a right wing. They didn't get a backup striker. They didn't get a center half, which was something that Jose has been wanted. They seemingly tried to get every center half you could possibly get in world football that was even available or not available. And they kind of got played on deadline day by Diego Godin, who is one of the three best center backs, plays for Atletico Madrid. And he has a $25 million release clause, and United activated that on deadline day. And then he's like, nah, I don't want this. And then, so he used United to get a contract raise at Atletico. But it's interesting that everyone's saying they need a center half and so forth, because they were one of the best defense, if not the best defenses, in all the Premier League last season. They still have the offense going forward. And they passed the ball around the back a lot and stuff like that. Jose plays a very packed, not parked the bus, but tight defensive and hit him on the counter. That's the type of style he likes to play. And I'm interested to see how they move forward, what this year looks like. Their best player, Paul Pogba, apparently it doesn't want to be there. He's apparently sick and tired of Jose Mourinho calling him out, not being a supportive manager. Take it how you want that. You know, a lot of you want a manager in your corner and not a manager to always be in the media saying a couple things and like discrediting how you play for the club when you're easily one of the top players on the team. That's just even when you're playing bad, he's still one of the top three players on the team. So he wants to go to Barcelona. His agent, Mino Raiola, he's trying to negotiate. And the transfer window for England closed on Thursday when I'm recording this today. But the rest of Europe and the rest of the world's transfer window is open until August 31st. So that move could very well happen. Barcelona, I mean, we'll see. I don't know. United, I don't think United's going to sell. And if they do, they can't have any replacement until January, which really limits them, especially with the strength of the squad especially with the outlook. If they want to contend for titles, they're not going to be able to do that without Pogba or a serviceable replacement. So it was a lot of negative towards them. There's a lot of weird vibes. I mean, United's still the most valuable franchise in the world. They're obviously going to get all the TV ratings. They're going to sell a bunch of merchandise, but they want to see flair. You see the cities killing teams 6-0 almost week in and week out. You see Liverpool may lose a game 3-3, or may tie a game 3-3 to a lesser opponent, or win a game, you know, lose a game 4-3, and they may give up a bunch of goals, but they play exciting soccer, and that's what we're asking for. And I'm a Liverpool supporter, but I'm not one of those people who roots against United. I don't root against their rivals. I mean, if it's in a title race, obviously, but I love soccer. It's probably my favorite sport to watch. And I just want to see it at the highest quality. When you have all these attacking players and you have studs across the field, you should be playing a more attacking style of soccer that treats the eye. I mean, the old United way is go for it as much as you can. You know, they're going to go out guns a-blazing, and that's not something we see from this United team. They get results, but at what price do those results come? At the price of the fans booing in the stadium, people being bored to watch them, and so it's a fine line between results and entertainment, because that's, and for me personally,
especially because it's not my team. If my team played, Liverpool played some boring soccer before we got Jurgen Klopp in. I mean, we didn't play boring soccer with Brendan Rodgers when we were contending for the title. But after that, when we lost Luis Suarez, it was just not very, it wasn't very exciting soccer, and it was dull. And now that we're spending players, we're putting infrastructure in, and it's just great. And that's what I mean, I would even hope Man United plays better, because Lukaku's exciting. Pogba. Fred's a young prospect. I saw him play in the Champions League, and he was great. Then you move down the list, and it's just Lingard, Martial, Rashford. Even player like Juan Mata is one of the most crafty players in England. So it's just like, you have all this talent. Let's see what you can do with it. And if not, I mean, I saw a stat that United, you know, for all of Moreno and United fans saying that everyone's spending crazily around him, like Liverpool and all these teams, United spent over $500 million in the less than three years Mourinho's been the coach or been the manager. That's a lot of money. So I don't know. I like United. I just want them to play exciting soccer. If they win, they win. If they lose, they lose. And that's what fans are asking for these days. You know, we're educated. We don't want to be bored to death when you have a payroll this high. So, speaking of high payrolls or lack of payroll, we're going to go to the most interesting team in the top six, and that's Tottenham, who spent a grand total of $0. Did not bring any players in. I don't think they sold any players. And they're just going to run this back with the same squad that's brought them three straight top three finishes. And they had, in the semifinals, they had the most players of all the teams. Their team's Belgium, England. They had their World Cup captain. France's World Cup winning captain, Hugo Lloris, is the captain of Tottenham. England was heavily represented. England's captain's on that team. It's just, you know, Christian Eriksen played for Denmark. Heung-min Son played for South Korea. There's just a bunch of captains on this team of international level. And I think it's going to be interesting because, well, can they get off to a fast start with all these players, you know, slowly coming back, slowly being integrated into the team? And it's just really precarious that they did not buy any players. Their head coach, Mauricio Pochettino, said it's brave. They're going into this brave because they love his team. He loves his team. And they're talented. They're deep. There's just a bunch of exciting. They play a great counter-attacking pressing style too. They score a bunch of goals. But as we saw in the Champions League, they always find a way to slip. And I don't know. And running it back with the same group, maybe they'll get past that. Maybe I don't think they're going to contend for the title. They have the fourth highest odds, according to this website. The website. So it's on GQ magazine, but let me get the proper odds. It doesn't say, but yeah, Tottenham is just, I mean, we could talk about them, but I could talk about them, but I mean, it's the same exact thing we've seen over the past four seasons. You know, they're going to get Harry Kane up top, Son flanking him, Eriksen behind him, a mix of Eric Lamella, but he's already hurt, so a mix of Lamella when he's healthy, and they have a young guy in Kondu. He's fast. He's good. But Lucas Moura, their midfield, Dembele, Wanyama, Eric Dier, Harry Winks, Christian Eriksen, Trippier. Kieran Trippier had a phenomenal World Cup. He made the All-World Cup team. He's the right back. Danny Rose, Jan Vertonghen, Toby Alderweireld, the Belgian back line, and Hugo Lloris. It's the same thing we've seen all the time. And this team has failed to get it done in the big stages. So I don't see too much change from them. And then that brings us to Chelsea, who have kind of had a weird offseason themselves. They were seemingly in the beginning of the season last year, they were firing their manager, Antonio Conte. He stayed on the whole season. Coach led him to an FA Cup title. And then he was supposed to get fired earlier in the offseason, but he stayed on for most of the season. Most of the offseason, running his camp, doing all these things. And we already knew who the coach in waiting was, Maurizio Sarri, who plays a beautiful style in Napoli. But Conte's still the coach. We didn't see anything different. So their new head coach, new manager comes into play. excuse me, and he's only had a couple weeks with the team. Their main signing, Jorginho from Napoli, he works hand-in-hand with Sarri from his time in Napoli, but we don't know how he's going to fit next to N'Golo Kanté in the midfield with him. And they lost Thibaut Courtois, their Belgian goalkeeper. He only $35 million, and they just spent a world record They spent the world record for a keeper, 80 million euros for a young Spanish keeper. His first name is Kepa. I'm not going to try pronouncing his last name. I'll completely botch it. Even if I had the pronunciation list in front of me, I'd probably botch it. So it's been a world record on him. They keep Eden Hazard. They keep N'Golo Kanté. And besides that, I think they loaned out a couple players. You know, Chelsea's very known for having a strong youth system, but just loaning them out. They like buying players and having, and there's no place for these young players to play. So they want to make sure that their young players are getting as much groom time as possible. So I don't have to expect of them. I think they're going to do better than people think. I think that he's a great coach. I think they're still, you know, this team is probably just as talented as the team that won the title. And yes, there's no Manchester City, but you know, the record that City broke was Chelsea's win record from 2016-17. And you added Jorginho to help Kanté. You can take Fabregas out of the equation. Ross Barkley's been getting some playing time. I know he's not the savior. Alvaro Morata, if he's not playing well, you have Olivier Giroud, World Cup winning striker. Hazard's still there. A young player named Hudson Odoi, he's there. I think Chelsea's going to play a lot more exciting soccer than they have in the past years, and they have players to do it. I don't know if they're going to be a title challenger. I think they'll be a solid top four challenger, which is what you can ask for. You know, they're not in a Champions League this year, and if they're not going to challenge for the title, they need to at least be fighting for that four spot. And fighting with that four spot, another team that's in the mix is Arsenal. And I fall in love with Arsenal every preseason. I actually picked them to win the title. I like to keep this thing. Before the transfer window opens, the transfer window closes last year, closed at August 31st. So I gave myself a couple. Okay, I made a prediction in early August. I said, you know, I think Arsenal's going to win. I think if Alexis Sanchez stays, all this can happen. Well, he stayed, but I watched him get trounced, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to go back on that prediction. You know, I walked it back. I got some more information because soccer doesn't really have a preseason. They do, but you don't, but it's not like, but the starting 11 rarely plays together and a lot of those things. But they have a new coach in Unai Emery, who left PSG, won everything he could in France and domestically. Before that, he was with Sevilla, and he led him to 3 straight Europa League titles, which is pretty remarkable. Even though it's the Europa League, it's still waving through European competition and getting the job done. So he's replaced Arsene Wenger. He's brought a new life and energy into the squad. They're running more. They're playing a faster pace. They're not just passing. They're not just playing patty cake and passing the ball around, training for the beautiful play. They're playing quick. They have the players to play quick. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan, Lacazette, depending on what lineup you want to throw out there. Mesut Ozil is still pulling strings. I think he's a great player. He's a joy to watch. He leads the Premier League in chances created almost every single season. What they need to improve is their defense. You know, they brought in Socrates, a center half from Dortmund, a Greek. So he's going to be partnered with Mustafi until Laurent Koscielny gets back from his injury. And you got Bellerin, you got Lichtensteiner. So they have some veterans they can use. They signed a goalkeeper so they can play. So they have two pretty strong goalkeepers if Petrček can, you know, keep turning back the clock. But they bought Leno from a German keeper from Bayer Leverkusen. And I actually just like their midfield too. They bought Lucas Torreira. They bought a couple just low-key signings that are going to make a difference. You know, they got rid of Jack Wilshere. They tried to sell Danny Welbeck unsuccessfully at this point. So I actually think they're going to make the top four. I think the top six is going to go in this order of Man City or Liverpool. I'm really torn. I don't want to sound like a homer, so I'm not going to say Liverpool's going to win because I really think they can. I think this is the squad that they can do it with. And I'm not really sure if City can duplicate that success. And I think they're going to be focusing a lot more on the European side of things, which is something I touched on earlier. So take that out of the equation. I think Liverpool City is the top two. I think Chelsea finishes three. I think Arsenal finishes four. United five, Tottenham six. I just think United's going to... I think Pogba's going to be sold. They're not going to be able to replace him. Even if he does stay, he clearly doesn't get along with the coach, the manager. I think he's a dead man walking. I think Tottenham, they don't have the greatest depth. I think Tottenham, with the World Cup mileage piled on, playing a full schedule with the Champions League, the FA Cup, and all that stuff, I don't think they can withstand. I don't think they can withstand a full season and finish. You know, they finished third last season. They did pretty well. I just don't see them doing it. I think Chelsea's going to struggle in the beginning, but I think when Chelsea gets all things clicking, understands what their manager wants them to do, they're just going to be playing great because they have the best player in the Premier League in N'Golo Kanté, the little Energizer Bunny, the holding midfielder from France, who was the best player in the World Cup. I think Jorginho is going to make life a lot easier for Morata. I think Hazard's going to be happy. He's named the captain, all that stuff. Who else is it? John Blank real quick. I talk about United, they have a lot of talent. I just don't know how that's going to hold. I think Tottenham's not going to hold together. I think Chelsea's going to be firing. I think Arsenal, Premier Aubameyang scored goals at a high clip last year. Besides Aubameyang, Lacazette's a great second option. Take out Aubameyang and you have Ozil and Mkhitaryan in a full season. We don't know what Emery's going to do in terms of his formation. He's traditionally like a 4-2-3-1. And he can do that. He can go 4-3-3. He can go 3-5-2. He can go 3-5-1-1, 3-4-3. There's just a bunch of options Arsenal can play, and I think they finally have the right manager to push the buttons to galvanize the fan base again, get everyone excited about Arsenal again. So I think they're going to make a Champions League. They don't have Chelsea and Arsenal don't have. They're playing Europa, but in the Europa League. But I think them not having Champions League football and having a full slate and having equal, if not more, depth than United and Tottenham is going to play a big role in this. So we'll see how that soccer prediction goes. But I think Liverpool's going to win. I'm just going to leave it at that. But outside of the top six, there's a lot of West Ham, Everton, the usual high spenders continued their spending sprees with all the money being floated in. Everton bought three Barcelona players or received three. Yari Mina, Colombia, he scored most of Colombia's goals. I think he scored three goals, all on corners, all on headers. But Everton, they bought Andre Gomez, who underwhelmed the Barcelona as a midfielder. Or he's on loan, I think. And we'll see how he looks. And they also bought who else they've got from Barcelona? I'm really forgetting this. Oh, Lucas Digne, who's a left back, which I don't really see as a position of need when they have Leighton Baines, unless Leighton Baines is going to be moved, but he's the longtime player there. So Leighton Baines, and then they signed Bernard, a Brazilian winger. Do I think that's going to make a massive difference? No, because they also signed Richarlison for a shocking $50 million, $40 million, I don't know what it was, depending on what you want to look at in terms of what country, what type of currency you're viewing it as. So not sure how they're going to play out. They don't have a striker still. I mean, unless you believe in Sirk Tusin, a Turkish striker, but he hasn't proven anything besides being a poacher in the box. So I think they spent a lot of money for 7th or 8th. I don't think they have nearly the talent or anything like that to compete, maybe for a Europa spot. Burnley finished in that spot last year. They're doing away. West Ham bought Jack Wilshere. I think they can... And who else they bought? They bought Fabianski, the keeper from Swansea. He was actually really good. Consistent, you know what you're going to get. I think they're going to be a good team. Besides those two, Burnley's going to take a step back. They finished 7th last year, going to be in a Europa spot. I think they're going to go to the mid mid to later of the table, maybe like the 12 to 15 range. Outside of that, outside of them, the two big spenders, Fulham, American-owned, not American, Shad Khan, owner of the Jackson Jaguars, owns Fulham. And they were the first promoted Premier League team to spend over $100 million. They got arguably the deal of the window with Jean-Michel Seri, who was once who Barcelona wanted, who all these major clubs wanted, and he signs with Fulham. So you have him. You have I'm drawing a blank right now, but they got some very good signings, and I think it's in terms of excitement from a young team and excitement from a promoted team, it's hard to get more excited than that. And the team that finished above them and blew the championship away was Wolverhampton and Wolves. And it's so they have like a weird infrastructure where Portuguese, I think they're Portuguese owned. One of the Portuguese super agents has a great relationship with the ownership, and he feeds these Portuguese players to them. They're starting goalkeeper. I think there's like 7 of their 11 starters are all Portuguese. They have one of the most exciting young players in Ruben Navas. And I just think Wolves and Fulham are going to probably, I could see them finishing 7th and 8th. I won't be surprised if I saw that. And, I mean, besides that, there's just the usual suspects, you know. This is my favorite thing. It kicked off Friday. Saturday morning, I wake up every morning. Sunday morning, I wake up every morning and watch them. I make sure I watch every Liverpool game. If I'm missing a game and I'm working or something, I record that game. So there's just a bunch of different things that I do that base. And as you've already known, I love this sport. It's up there with basketball and football. And, you know, with all of these things going on, with football getting back in the swing of things, college and pro, with the NBA coming, it's only 2 months away. And then soccer started. So soccer's like the prequel. You know, we only had less than a month before this. It was only like 28 days in between the World Cup final and this. So soccer's never ending too. So it's just, I'm just very excited about this. Very excited about soccer kicking off and the sports time and all that stuff. So we'll leave soccer. Oh, we have about four or five minutes left. So one of the other things about soccer is that the Serie A, Cristiano Ronaldo left Real Madrid and joined Juventus. It's kind of weird that Ronaldo and LeBron left in the same exact offseason. Ronaldo, is he the best player of all time? It's him or Messi seems to be the obvious answer. So the old timers like to say Pele. I think Zinedine Zidane belongs in that conversation. So there's a lot of different ways to go about this, but can he dominate a third league? He didn't overwhelm at Man United in England because he was so young, but he dominated La Liga. He dominates the Champions League. Can he go to Italy and get them over the hump, get Juventus their first Champions League title? Because they're gonna win domestically. That's just a foregone conclusion at this point. And if they can get, if he brings them a Champions League title, I think the GOAT conversation in terms of soccer is done. He's revered in Turin, where Juventus plays, because, and everyone, if you can look up his bicycle kick, was probably the most beautiful and pure bicycle kick I've ever seen live against in Juventus to complete a hat trick. And this was just past year. And the crowd gave him a standing ovation. It was just amazing and breathtaking. And he thanked it. And you could tell Italian soccer fans are crazy. I love them. They have some of the best crowds with Germany. Those environments are just outrageous. So that's the outside of England, that's the big storyline. And then on the flip side of that, can Real Madrid spread the wealth enough around with Gareth Bale, Karim Benzema, Isco, Marco Asensio, two of the top three or four midfielders in the world, and Luka Modric and Toni Kroos, can they keep that ship going? Can they keep the Madrid ship going? I'm not sure if they can. Barcelona made a couple great signings. Arturo Vidal is going to add depth in that midfield. Malcolm's going to add depth to the wing. They signed a center back. I don't know what exactly his name is. He's from a local. He's from a Spanish league. He's from La Liga. So that. So Barcelona should be is the favorites. I think Atletico Madrid's going to have something to say as well. They brought in Thomas Lemar. They talk about a team that revamped and stuff. They are just looking. And that you know the defense they're going to play. You know all these things with Atletico Madrid if you follow La Liga, and it's just going to be. I mean, I'm just excited soccer's here. I'm excited football's here. You know, I'm kind of sad basketball's gone, but for a little bit it can go away. We can give all the attention to the football and the football. Baseball's heating up. I mean, the playoff races, and the NL's starting to form itself just a little bit. The AL, the Red Sox are just they're on pace to win like 115 games, which is just crazy to think about. Playing in the worst division in baseball, playing two of the worst teams in baseball in your division 18, 19 times a year in the Blue Jays and Orioles always helps, but they swept the Yankees 4-game sweep. They took advantage of the Yankees' miscue, so I mean, I think that's all I got to say. Besides that, thanks for listening, guys. You know, I'm starting to get the hang of this a little bit. Maybe we'll start getting guests when training camp goes down for Noah. The regular season's going to be here. There's going to be just a lot of stuff to talk about. I mean, I went an hour and 25 minutes about preseason football, and I had a little bit of ammunition left, and I went finish it up with soccer, got it in. I'm not going to go week by week with soccer. I will go week by week with football. I will go week by week with basketball when that starts up. So, once again, thanks for listening, guys. And check me out. I'm at hoopshabit.com. I'm writing fantasy football for Fanball coming up. So if you guys like some fantasy football advice, I can send you some links. Just I'm pretty much just trying to do it all I can right now. So anyway, thanks for checking it out, guys, and have a good one.